Most people think they know the Cayman Islands, a playground for billionaires, shell companies, and scuba divers. But beneath the manicured beaches and financial gloss lies a different story, one that rarely makes it into brochures or banking expos. What if we told you that the Caymans were once a forgotten outpost where enslaved Africans and shipwrecked sailors built communities from coral rock and hardship? That the islands never had plantations, yet still carry the scars of colonial rule? Or that beneath every conch shell served in a luxury resort is a culinary legacy rooted in survival, migration, and cultural fusion? This isn't just a Caribbean getaway. It's a living archive of Afro-Caribbean resilience, seafaring traditions, buried histories, and quiet rebellions, told through the songs of fishermen, the rituals of cooks, and the silences in unmarked graveyards. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favourite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Salt, Sharks and Shipwrecks. The Hidden Roots of the Cayman Islands. I. A Geography of Isolation. Out in the turquoise stretch of the Western Caribbean Sea lies a small cluster of islands, low, flat, and seemingly inconspicuous. The Cayman Islands. Grand Cayman, Cayman Brac, and Little Cayman. Three limestone siblings born not from volcanic fury, like much of the Caribbean, but from the coral and crust of ancient seabeds. No mountains, no rivers, just rugged coastal mangroves. Weather-beaten shrubs and the persistent hum of trade winds brushing against iron shore. For much of their early history, the Caymans were considered nearly uninhabitable. Spanish explorers mapped them in the early 1500s, naming them Las Tortugas for the countless sea turtles swimming offshore. Later, British privateers renamed them Caymanas, referencing the alligator-like reptiles they thought they saw in the swamps. Yet even as the Spanish and British fought for imperial dominance, the Caymans were largely ignored. Why? No gold, no silver, no sugar plantations, no grand port cities or fertile plains, just a jagged trio of reefs, storms, and solitude. That same remoteness would later shape everything, from who lived here to how they survived, from what they ate to the secrets they carried. Second, castaways, runaways, and sailors. Cayman's first true settlers weren't noblemen or missionaries. They were shipwrecked sailors, escaped enslaved people, and outcasts from Jamaica, Honduras, Cuba, and beyond. In the 1660s and 1700s, British sailors began stopping at the islands to harvest turtles, a reliable source of protein that could survive long voyages alive in ship holds. But some of those sailors stayed behind, often unwillingly, marooned by storms or mutiny. Others chose to remain, seeking refuge from imperial politics or enslavement. The first known permanent settlement appeared in the 1730s on Grand Cayman, with sparse family names like Bodden, McLaughlin, and Ebanks, names that endure today, etched on local storefronts and school walls. Over time, this motley collection of Africans, Scots, Irish, and English settlers created a fragile society based on sea trade, subsistence farming, and oral tradition. There were no grand manors or lords, but there was community. Caymanians, as they came to be known, were bonded not by class or conquest, but by resilience and the ever-present threat of isolation. Third, slavery in the shadows. Much of Cayman's historical mythology clings to a dangerous idea that slavery here was mild or even absent compared to the horrors of Jamaica or Haiti. This myth, still whispered today, is a form of erasure. Records show that by the early 1800s, roughly half of Grand Cayman's population were enslaved Africans. But unlike other Caribbean islands, Cayman had no sugarcane plantations. The enslaved worked in households, fisheries, salt ponds, and shipyards, and were often spread across vast rural homesteads. This created a subtle, more insidious form of domination. Less overseers with whips, more masters who controlled every aspect of daily life through proximity and paternalism. Abuse, assault, and dispossession still occurred, just without the sprawling plantations that mark the Caribbean slave past so visibly. After the British Empire abolished slavery in 1834, Cayman's freedmen received no land, no reparations, and little protection. Many became sharecroppers or were forced into maritime labour, the only trade left open to them. And yet, despite these chains, Caymanian culture retained traces of African spirituality, music, and folklore, passed in whispers, sung in lullabies, hidden in cooking pots and graveyard rituals. The soul of Africa never left. The fourth, the sea as lifeline and curse. If there was one thing that defined Caymanian life, it was the sea. Turtling became the island's first industry. For centuries, Caymanian men would spend weeks or months aboard small boats, catching green sea turtles in Honduran waters. These were brought back alive and kept in coastal corrals until sold for meat, oil, or leather. In time, the turtle population began to collapse, a reality that sparked the creation of the modern Cayman Turtle Centre decades later. By the late 1800s, Caymanian men were being recruited as seamen by British and American shipping companies. They served as engineers, deckhands, cooks, and captains, often working in brutal conditions. But their wages, wired back home, became the backbone of the local economy. Entire families were supported by the dollar bills their fathers sent from ports in Mobile, Galveston, or Liverpool. Homes were built, children were fed, churches were founded, and the women left behind. They became community leaders, educators, and oral historians, keeping Caymanian culture alive while their men braved hurricanes and engine rooms. The sea gave, the sea took, but it also united. V. A colony of a colony. Politically, Cayman's status was always ambiguous. It was a British territory, but not a crown colony. Instead, it was administered through Jamaica, a system that left many Caymanians feeling like second-class subjects. This colony of a colony status bred frustration. Cayman received little funding, few visitors, and almost no say in imperial decisions. Roads were unpaved, schools were scarce, healthcare was rudimentary. The islands existed in bureaucratic limbo. When Jamaica pushed for independence in the late 1950s, Caymanians were asked to decide their own fate. Would they join an independent Jamaica or remain tied to Britain? In a dramatic move, the majority voted to remain under British rule, not because they felt deep allegiance to the crown, but because they feared political instability, economic uncertainty, and cultural domination by Kingston. That decision, made in 1962, would shape Cayman's identity for generations. The islands would go on to develop separately and radically. Sixth, faith, family, and the British flag. Religion played a central role in unifying Caymanian society. Missionaries from the Wesleyan Methodist and Baptist churches arrived in the 1800s, building not just churches but schools, orphanages, and social networks. The churches became centres of moral instruction and political order. They offered community in times of hardship, refuge from the chaos of empire, and a narrative of salvation that appealed to both white settlers and formerly enslaved Afro-Caymanians. But Christianity here took on uniquely Caribbean forms. Prayer meetings blended with drumming. Hymns were punctuated by claps and chants. Burial rituals incorporated African mourning customs, including nighttime vigils and dream interpretation. As Caymanian society matured, these churches also became incubators for cultural memory. Oral storytelling, music, and cooking were often transmitted within church spaces, wrapped in spiritual symbolism. The British flag flew high, but the heart of the islands beat to a different rhythm, one rooted in faith, folklore, and family. 7. The Forgotten Graves. One of the most haunting truths about the Cayman Islands is how little we know about its enslaved past. Unlike Jamaica, where plantation records were meticulously kept, Cayman slaveholding families operated on smaller scales, often informally, often off the books. Archaeologists and local historians have uncovered unmarked graves along cliffs, beneath homes, and even under churches. Some families unknowingly built structures on top of ancestral burial grounds. Others know, but choose silence. Why? Guilt? Shame? Forgetting as self-preservation. There are stories passed down of enslaved midwives whose herbal knowledge saved generations, of old men who spoke languages no one could trace, of restless spirits said to haunt the shores near Boden Town. And then there are the silences, where records should be, where gravestones once stood, where names should live but don't. These silences speak loudest of all. The modern myth of paradise. Today, the Cayman Islands are sold as paradise. Crystal waters, luxury villas, tax-free commerce, a global finance capital floating on Caribbean charm. But that image is only half the story. The other half is found in the faded photo of a sea captain on a grandmother's wall, in the old woman weaving silver thatch baskets by lamplight, in the teenage boy fishing from Iron Shore with a line wrapped around a soda bottle. Caymanian identity was forged not by wealth, but by weathering the storms of history, literal and political. As tourism and offshore finance flooded the islands in the late 20th century, older Caymanians watched their world shift. Land prices soared. Foreign workers outnumbered locals. Heritage sites were bulldozed to build condos. Yet somehow the culture held on, quietly, patiently, waiting to be remembered. Ninth legacy in the limestone. The limestone itself tells stories, fossils embedded in stone, carvings made by fishermen, foundations laid by enslaved hands. Each village, West Bay, Boden Town, East End, carries memories in its architecture, its dialect, its rhythm. Even place names whisper of the past, Spots, Pedro, Breakers, all echoing family names, shipwrecks, or moments now half remembered. And the people. They still sing the old songs, still tell stories about duppies in the bush, still cook cassava cake for weddings and wakes alike. Cayman is not lost, but its soul must be protected from erasure, from commodification, from the false narrative that its past was bloodless or bland. Because beneath the beach towels and bank accounts, this is a land of memory, a land of salt, sharks and shipwrecks, and survival. Chapter 2. From Conch to Capital. Cultural resilience in the age of offshore wealth. 1. The transformation begins. In 1962, when Jamaica became independent, the Cayman Islands opted to stay under British control, a decision made out of pragmatism rather than ideology. That choice, while controversial at the time, set in motion a transformation unlike any seen elsewhere in the Caribbean. The 1970s and 80s ushered in the rise of offshore finance. Foreign banks, corporate trust services, and legal firms flooded into Georgetown, turning the sleepy capital into a global hub for capital accumulation. Within a generation, the Cayman Islands became home to over 100,000 registered companies, more than three times the actual population. But as the skyscrapers rose and luxury yachts anchored in Seven Mile Beach, questions lingered. What happened to the fishermen, the storytellers, the basket weavers? How did a culture rooted in the sea survive the tidal wave of wealth? Second, a new class divide. Before the rise of finance, Cayman's class divisions were modest. Most families lived similarly, growing cassava, catching fish, and relying on money sent from seafaring relatives. The islands were poor but egalitarian. By the 1990s, that balance shattered. New immigrants arrived from the UK, Canada, the US, and Asia. Bankers, lawyers, real estate moguls, and consultants. They brought with them not only capital, but new social structures, gated communities, private clubs, elite schools. Native Caymanians, many of whom had sold ancestral land or been priced out of their villages, found themselves marginalized in their own country. Some prospered, especially those who invested early in tourism or finance, but many became cultural outsiders to a new society they technically governed. A quiet resentment grew, not of foreigners, necessarily, but of what they represented, a system that rewarded extraction over heritage. The third battle for culinary memory. Perhaps nowhere is Caymanian culture more resilient and more contested than in its cuisine. In a globalized economy where imported food dominates and chain restaurants abound, traditional Caymanian cooking has become a radical act of preservation. Meals here are more than sustenance. Their memory, migration, and resistance simmered into every bite. Callaloo and cassava, tastes of the ancestors. Callaloo soup, made with leafy greens, salted pork, and scotch bonnet, traces its roots to West African cooking. Cassava cake, dense and subtly sweet, is baked in coconut milk and dates back to indigenous traditions and African adaptation. Fish rundown, a stew of mackerel, coconut milk, and spices, has become a Caymanian staple, slow-cooked and soul-nourishing. Yet these dishes are disappearing from modern restaurant menus. Younger Caymanians, growing up in a fast-paced, tech-driven economy, are often more familiar with sushi than turtle stew. In response, community elders and chefs are leading a quiet revolution. Cooking classes, recipe preservation projects, and farm-to-table collaborations with local fishermen and farmers. To cook Caymanian is to remember who you are and where you came from. Fourth, music in the margins. Cayman's music history is lesser known than Jamaica's reggae or Trinidad's soca, but it's no less profound. Traditional rake and scrape bands built around homemade instruments, maracas, goatskin drums, and handsaws, once played at every wedding, christening, and wake. The songs told stories of love, loss, hurricanes, and spiritual visions. Some were in English, others in Creole patois, now largely forgotten. Today, you're more likely to hear dance hall or EDM at a beach bar than live traditional music. But the heartbeat of Cayman sound still lives in school music programs reviving folk songs, in church choirs blending gospel with ancestral rhythm, in small festivals where drummers gather under the moonlight to call forth the old spirits, and in homes across the islands, vinyl records spin the voices of a generation not yet silenced. V. Land theft. Few issues stir deeper emotion in the Cayman Islands than land ownership. In the past, land was passed down through oral agreements. fathers giving sons a slice of coastal bush, grandmothers granting a corner of cassava field. There were few lawyers, fewer deeds. But as tourism and real estate boomed, foreign developers swept in. Land that had sat in families for generations was suddenly eyed for luxury condos and beachfront hotels. Offers were made, legal loopholes exploited. Some families sold under pressure, others lost their claims entirely. Villages became resorts, footpaths became private roads, cultural spaces became swimming pools. And while tourism brought jobs, it also brought cultural erosion. Tour guides were trained to present island life in digestible sound bites, often omitting slavery, colonialism, or political controversy. Cultural experiences were sanitized. Festivals were marketed more for selfies than stories. For many Caymanians, the pain is acute. They watch visitors sipping piña coladas on land once walked by enslaved ancestors, without knowing or caring what came before. 6 Sacred Spaces, Hidden Stories. Across the islands, sacred spaces continue to defy erasure. Mission House in Boden Town holds the memory of early missionaries, school teachers, and resistance thinkers. Pedro Street James, often called the birthplace of democracy in the Cayman Islands, is both a colonial great house and a symbol of Caymanian independence of mind. Wattle and daub houses, made of thatch, wood and mud, still stand in pockets of East End and North Side, monuments to architectural resilience. And then there are the unmarked spaces, graveyards with no headstones, bush trails known only to elders, sea caves where escaped slaves once hid, or met to plan a voyage to freedom. A new generation is working to preserve these places, not just through museums, but through oral history, drone mapping, and cultural storytelling workshops. The goal, to make memory visible again. The Seventh Youth Question. Cayman's youth are caught in a complex web. On one hand, they are global citizens, digital natives, social media creators, and fintech professionals. On the other, they are the inheritors of a fragile culture, often under siege by consumerism and convenience. In schools, Caribbean history is taught, but often as dates and facts, not lived experience. Some students can name European explorers, but not local slave women who delivered babies during storms. They can describe economic indicators, but not explain the symbolism in their grandmother's kitchen altar. But change is brewing. Caymanian youth movements are reclaiming identity through film, poetry, and protest. They're asking hard questions. Why are Caymanians becoming a minority in their own workforce? Why is land so expensive that locals can't afford to stay? Why do tourists know more about snorkeling than about Emancipation Day? And they are answering with action, launching blogs, building heritage gardens, creating documentaries, forming cultural collectives. The next Cayman won't be built in a bank. It will rise from memory, creativity, and resistance. In spiritual continuities. Religion remains central to life in the Cayman Islands, but not as simple church-going. Caymanian spirituality is syncretic, part Christianity, part folklore, part ancestral memory. Dapis, spirits of the dead, are still feared. Sea spirits are still respected. Dreams are still interpreted as warnings. Bush medicine remains in practice, both herbal and spiritual. Women are the keepers of these traditions, grandmothers who light candles for the dead, midwives who whisper protective prayers, healers who know which root to boil for what ache. Modern medicine exists, of course, but in rural communities and among the elderly, spiritual healing coexists with pharmaceuticals, often in quiet contradiction. This fusion of belief is not backward. It is adaptive. It is survival. The caiman that fights back. In recent years, cultural organizations have grown bolder. National Trust for the Cayman Islands has expanded efforts to preserve historical sites and species. Cayman National Cultural Foundation, CNCF, stages plays, exhibitions, and musical festivals rooted in Caymanian history. Local artists are using painting, dance, and photography to reframe narratives of identity and colonialism. There's also a quiet activism. In every pot of turtle stew passed down, in every child taught to identify medicinal herbs, in every song sung in the old tongue. This is not resistance with fists, it is resistance with memory. X. Toward the future. The Cayman Islands stand at a crossroads. Again, climate change threatens to swallow low-lying villages. Global scrutiny of offshore banking could destabilize the economy. Cultural homogenization looms with every flight that lands from Miami or London. But there is hope. In the rustle of silver thatch, in the beat of drums on a dirt floor, in the soft, firm voice of a Caymanian elder saying, "This is who we are. This is where we come from." The future of the Cayman Islands will not be written in spreadsheets or resort brochures. It will be carved into driftwood, etched into cooking pots, spoken across kitchen tables, and sung in the voices of those who remember and refuse to forget.